Welcome to episode 110, The Ethics of Logging. I'm your host, X-Punk X, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join live in our chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, which can be found at 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter, which is where you find all of our important information at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Daryl, welcome back. I realized as we were talking here that it actually is episode 111, so we skipped an episode there, I think.
Oops, oh well. I'm sure everyone will forgive us. You know, we've had so many talk shoe problems. Who can keep anything straight these days?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those. We're actually live, and we actually have a handful of people in the chat room tonight. We could actually go ahead and get back on to talk shoe. It's been kind of nice to get on to talk shoe now.
Yeah. You know, it's just not the same when you do it offline.
It isn't. And you know, it's me and you talking, but it's not the same without people actually, you know, there with us. So it's actually good to be back. We thought there for a minute that we were going to not be able to do the show live again because TalkShoe again wouldn't let us onto the website when we first started. But hey, we're back in there and we're all live, so we're all good to go. Daryl, how have you been since last week?
Oh, pretty good. We recorded Caches of the Roundtable 24 on Saturday. And that's going to actually be the last Caches of the Roundtable for a few months. We're going to take a couple of months off and, you know, actually go caching for a change because it's been one of those years and I just need a little break, basically. But Sunday we did get out caching with the goal of finding 13 virtual caches so that we could hit our 100th total virtual find. And we did hit that. We got more than 30 caches in total. We broke our 2600th find as well. But really, our cool find of the day was actually a park in Somerset, Michigan, where there was a virtual cache, and it was just amazing. It's the estate of an old cement tycoon, and on his estate, he had, I want to say, 17 bridges. I'd have to go and look it up again. Made all of these look like they're wooden bridges. There's cover bridges, there's like slat bridges, there's, you know, all kinds of just really cool looking stuff. And I have some Flickr photos that I found. They're not mine, but someone else did take some photos. And you can kind of get a feel for these. But all of these bridges are actually made out of cement.
Wow.
None of them are wood. And some of them we actually would walk up to wondering if they were wood or not, even knowing that they were wood, they were cement. You just walk up to them, they have the right tint, they look right, you know, just, oh, some amazing stuff. And we didn't really have the time to really go and check it out, and all we had with us was the iPhone, so we got a whole bunch of iPhone photos, sent them to all our friends, and we got to go back.
Yeah, that's
one of the cool things.
That sounds cool. That sounds really cool.
It was very, very cool. And one of the coolest things is the clubhouse that was on this property. Apparently, there was a wood manor that burned down a long time ago. But the clubhouse had actually been used as a house after, you know, the family had sold the property and everything. But that clubhouse is actually underground. So you walk up and you're walking onto the house. And then there's like a deck down below, you know, coming out of the hill, and there's the entrance to the house. Well, the chimneys for the boiler and everything are a couple of cement tree stumps.
Oh, wow.
It was just amazing. And unfortunately, those tree stumps aren't in very good shape anymore. They're still, you know, definitely looking pretty good, but they're starting to crumble. These were done in the 1920s through 30s. Most of the bridges had been restored in 2001, and it is just really amazing stuff. So we're really, really looking forward to going back there, preferably in the fall when we can get some nice fall colors. Now, what were you up to this weekend?
Well, this weekend we actually went camping, which is actually really fun. We stayed at this camping reservoir area, and then we stayed in some of the cabins that they have there. It was really a cool place to find, you know, to camp. The one thing that actually surprised me a lot, and I don't know if I Twittered this or not, but we were swimming in the lake, and it's really kind of a muddy type of a thing, and I was swimming, and I had thrown my keys in my swimsuit, expecting to take them out and put them into our bag that we had there, and I forgot. And next thing I know, I feel with my feet something. And I'm like, oh, it must be someone's like swim goggles. I pick them up, and it's my keys. So I was really lucky to find them, because Jules' keys were actually locked in the van already. So it's a good thing I could find them. And I washed my USB keys, I guess.
Oh, no.
But it was okay. They still work. So.
Well, you got to watch it, too, with a lot of the newer keys, because they have the chips in them that will get messed up if they get wet.
It actually was okay. They both of my ones that I had on my keys still work. So it luckily still is good for me.
Well, that's good to hear.
Now, Daryl, I hear a lot of new things happening in the news. Can you kick us off?
Sure. We'll start off with GroundSpeak's update that just hit last Wednesday for the geocaching.com site. And this release was said to have had mostly bug fixes. And some of those include the nearest cache search page now ignores caches placed on your ignore list. They have fixed an issue with the stats bars improperly displaying for accounts containing an apostrophe. They fixed issues of bookmark paging timing out and displaying incorrect contents for indicated page. Let's see, what else did they do? They have fixed issues with some users receiving duplicate weekly email notifications. The hide and seek a cache by username now correctly accepts a number of characters required to support any length username. Fixed issues with IE6 not allowing profile edits. Fixed compatibility issues with IE8 when selecting adding a GPS device to an account. Also of note in this update is removal of the old version of the caches along a route page. We'll include a link to the post that includes all of that information in the show notes.
Now, Garmin has also finally announced the new smaller touchscreen GPSRs, which have been rumored since last month. The Dakota 10 and 20 boost up to 20 hours on a single pair of AA batteries. They support a 2.6 touchscreen, and they have 850 meg of internal memory. They've got USB connectivity, and they're paperless caching. They have paperless caching support. They support up to 1,000 waypoints and 50 routes, 2,000 geocaches, and an active track log of 10,000 points and 200 saved tracks. The sharing your waypoints track and tracks, routes, and geocaches wirelessly with the compatible Dakota, Oregon, or Colorado units and Fortrax devices also. Neither unit supports Where I Go. The 10 lists for just under $300 in the U.S., while the 20 lists at less than $350 and should be available sometime in the third quarter. Daryl, how about the news from Trimble?
Yep, Trimble announced today that their All-Sport GPS, Geocache Navigator, and Trimble Outdoor applications have been added to T-Mobile's Web2Go catalog. These GPS on cellular applications are available on many GPS-enabled phones from T-Mobile at $5.99 each per month. We'll have the link to the Trimble Outdoors applications for T-Mobile website in the show notes for more information.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. This is what I call the geocaching question of the day. This last week, I asked the question, have you ever checked the physical geocache logbook against the online log? What did you find? The responses were divided just about 50-50. Those that did check the physical logbook against the online logs found that more people actually signed the logbook than log the cache online. Those that replied they did not check the logbook against the online log said they trust the other geocachers to play the game fairly. What about you? Do you verify your logbooks on the caches you own? You want to find out more? Follow me, The Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Thank you, The Bad Cop. That kicks us off for our topic tonight. We're actually talking about the ethics of logging caches.
Hey, guys. This is Joe from Clan Doyle, calling from Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm on my way to work, so I'm going to miss your show tonight. But I wanted to call and leave my comments on logging ethics. And pretty much I subscribe to the no log, no fine logic, except in special circumstances. You know, you hike 20 miles to get to a cache and you don't have a pen. In this case, you can usually make an arrangement with the cache owner, maybe send them a picture of you holding the cache or describe the area that the cache is in. I don't know any owners, including myself, that wouldn't take that into consideration. Nobody expects you to, you know, hike back out 20 miles to find a pen. But only in special circumstances like that, and only at the discretion of the cache owner. Now, in the case of finding pieces of the cache laying around, that would also be at the discretion of the cache owner. I would say no, unless you're an out-of-town cacher or something like that, somewhere where you won't be able to get back to it after it gets replaced. Then, again, at the discretion of the cache owner. Other than that, no log, no fine. Pretty strict about it. And I always go in and with extra logs just in case the logbook is missing, just so that I don't have to try to claim a fine without actually logging the cache. That's about it. Keep up the good work. Excellent show. I love the fact that you guys try to do this live and try to get everybody involved. And thanks for the show. Cash the plan. Bye.
Thank you for that voicemail. We are going to be talking tonight about having a discussion on the ethics of logging rather than the rules of logging. Now, if you want to participate in our show tonight, go ahead and give us a call at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Make sure you press the *8 on your keypad on the phone. Or if you're in our chat room, go ahead and press the request to talk button so we can get you in here and we know you want to talk. So, Daryl, ethics of logging. I mean, it's one of those topics that ethics are kind of, there's no hard set in stone thing here. You know, what do you think about, you know, logging? And then I guess the thing that brought this up here is I was the other day with someone who was placing a cache, and they placed the cache, it was under their account. And I ask everybody, you know, what do I do here? Can I sign the cache? Or can I sign the log and then the log as I found? I mean, what do you guys think? And so that kind of brought this up here. Daryl, what do you think about logging?
Well, when it comes to those caches that haven't been published yet, in my opinion, until it's published, you can't have an FTF. And this is one of the things that really does get a lot of people irritated is those FTFs before it's been published. So typically when we have someone who finds a cache before it's been published, we call it like a quality control find and make sure in the log to note, you know, QC find and then put the FTF for the next person to sign under. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a legitimate find. If you found the cache even before it's been published, it's just not the first to find because that required, you know, for it to be published on the site where anyone could get to it.
Yeah, I would say the same thing here too. And that's what I ended up doing. I, you know, I didn't want to claim the first to find because I was there when they placed it. In fact, I even went up and actually put the cache in the area off the trail. So I couldn't claim that as a first to find because for me, I really wasn't the first to find. I actually, you know, in theory, placed the cache. But, you know, it wasn't under my account. I haven't yet had either of my sons place a cache yet, so I haven't logged any of their caches, obviously, because they don't have any. But this is actually my mother-in-law who placed this cache. And so I was with her when she did it. I put the cache down. I went ahead and said, you know, I wasn't going to claim the first to find. I waited until someone actually found it. And I actually went back and logged the cache. I didn't sign the I didn't sign the book when I went and placed the cache. I actually went back and actually placed, you know, opened the log signed the logbook before I signed it online. So to me, that's an okay thing. I mean, technically, is it a find? Yes. Did I need the GPS and everything? No, but because I knew where it was at. But still, it was still a find for me because I was there and I found the cache.
Now, that kind of extends it a little bit further, though, in that many people I know, and we actually kind of did this too when Dree and I had separate accounts, they won't log finds where they were actually present for the hide. Because that, you know, if you're there, you have, you know, special information that regular finders couldn't have. And for Dree and I, it was more a matter of, you know, we're really hiding the caches together. So we didn't count them as finds because they were caches that we essentially had placed together, even though they were under two different accounts. Now, I know a lot of people who still will do that, and even some people in the area who will have, like, accounts for their dogs, and their dogs will go hide caches, and then they go and log those caches that their dog hid, which, in my opinion, that's not quite, you know, kosher.
Yeah, no.
That's a little bit too far.
I would agree too. I would say, you know, if it's a dog account, I mean, that's cool if you want to have an account for your dog. I mean, we've got accounts for our kids, and our kids are, you know, 3 and almost 2. So obviously they're not actually doing the finds or with us. It's more of a kind of, you know, how to keep track of the finds that they were with us with. And, you know, eventually have them look back and be like, oh, those are the ones that we were with mom and dad on. But as far as, and that's one of the reasons I haven't said place a cache as, you know, Micah actually hid the cache. I didn't put it under his account because, no, he really didn't. I mean, there are ones that if he's with me when I'm hiding them, I go ahead and put him, you know, his name on the actual, like, who hid this cache with me. But I don't have him as doing that. And I think that if I did that where I had his name on the account, but I actually hid the account, the cache, I probably wouldn't find those. Same reason I don't go back and actually log my own caches as found, because I really, in theory, didn't find them. But as far as for this one with my mother-in-law, I did go ahead and find it because she's not technically, you know, she's not technically part of my, you know, caching family. I mean, she is, you know, because she's my mother-in-law, she's, you know, part of the family, obviously, but she's not, you know, with me and my household. So I think that it would change if she was living here in the household. I probably wouldn't have logged it unless, you know, now that brings up a point. You know, when Micah and Eli are old enough, my kids are old enough, do I, you know, if they go out and hide their own caches, of course I'm going to go find them. I mean, because I probably won't go with them when they hide them. But, and so that's a different story. But, you know, for the mother-in-law one, I thought it was okay. I didn't really care. Yeah, you know, as far as signing, yeah, I went ahead and signed the log.
Well, we move on to another topic that Clan Doyle had mentioned, which is the potentially destroyed caches where you find bits and pieces. Now, that gets a little bit tricky, especially if you can't get a hold of the cache owner. But I totally agree with his assessment in that you need to contact the cache owner and find out if what you found was the cache. I usually, if it's not something that can be cleaned up and, you know, put back, I usually try to CETO it and bring it out and, you know, try to pass it back to the cache owner. And, you know, most of the times that's when I would finally get the decision. But I have had a few cache owners that said, oh, yeah, that's definitely it. You can log the find. And on a couple of them, I've opted not to do that just because I didn't feel comfortable enough with what I found as being the cache. You know, it was outside of its hiding place, you know, whatever. And I didn't want to take credit for finding something that I didn't feel was really hidden to be found.
Yeah, no, I did have that same kind of an issue here. And before I get into that, if you guys do have any topics, anything, information that you want to put in on this topic, please give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our TechCast ID is 7525. And press the *8 key to get on to the request to talk. Now, if you're listening to this as a podcast, you can still participate in this conversation. Our voicemail line is 206-3503-GPS. Go ahead and leave us a voicemail. Now, there was this cache that I did have that issue with. I went and it was in the back of a cemetery, kind of off of, actually out of the cemetery, but down this kind of hill in this woods, that I thought that I originally found the cache because it was this Tupperware container, and I kind of opened it up, and it I could tell that it was definitely a Tupperware container, but I didn't feel that it was the cache for many reasons, because it kind of still had old lunch remnants in it, so I didn't really figure it was the cache. So I left that alone and kind of made sure to wash my hands off, because that's kind of grossed me out. But I did not sign the online log saying that I had found it. I did, however, go back and find it later, and found that it was not the cache. And part of the reason I didn't feel comfortable signing originally was, A, I didn't find the logbook and other things strewn about. I just found the container. The other reason is because other people said the same thing. They found this other container, and that wasn't it. So I was comfortable with that being the fact that that was not the container, so I did not log it. Now, for me, I would say if you find evidence that you know it's the cache container, like if you find the container and maybe the logbook and things like that strewn about, I would say I would be comfortable enough signing the log. I would definitely contact the cache owner for many reasons, because I would really want to verify that and also tell them that your cache is pretty much destroyed. And so I would definitely go ahead and use the contact the owner and find out what they thought about that. And if they said, no, it's not the cache, I'm not going to log it. I mean, again, it is on how you want to play the game, because it is, every man kind of how you want to play it separately. But again, I would say at least contact the cache owner and see if that was the contents.
Yeah, really what it comes down to on most of these is whether the cache owner is going to give you credit for the find or not. And that's entirely at their discretion, in my opinion. Dudley Grunt, though, in the chat room is talking that without talking to the cache owner, I wouldn't and might not if it's just a piece of plastic or something. I did offer my... Sorry, that got cut off. He found only the logbook, but not the container. He decided to go back, though. Now, again, in my opinion, if you found the logbook, really, the way that Groundspeak's rules are these days, the logbook is really all that's essential to the cache. So if you found the logbook, and it's obviously the logbook, then something happened to that cache, so I'd be pretty confident that the cache had been muggled or whatever. And if I couldn't get the cache owner to respond, after a week or two, I'd probably still log that as a find. And that did happen to me once, where I found pages of the logbook, some toys, and other debris. I was there with someone who had previously found the cache, and they confirmed that the cache was not where it was supposed to be, not where it had been earlier, and it was nowhere in the immediate area. Contacted the cache owner, couldn't get a response out of them, so I logged it as a find.
Yeah, and we've had Flag Mountain Hikers in our chat room said too that the only cache that they make sure that the logs are equal to the finds is their webcam cache, and that's because they have to have a picture posted. No picture, and they delete the log, just because that's part of the requirements. And again, that gets back into the additional logging requirements, but it is a webcam cache, and so that's the one that they audit as far as did it log, is it a find? And that kind of also brings up the fact too, like as far as ethics of logging, like is it okay to, is it okay to not have a pen with you and still claim it as a find, even though you didn't sign the physical logbook? I mean, I don't know. Daryl, what do you think?
Yeah, that depends a lot on the cache and the cache owner. But in most cases, I would say if you can prove that you were there, take a photo of the cache, with yourself or something, and then email it to the owner, then okay, I can see counting that as a find. But really, the way that the rules are again now, it's all about that logbook. So if you don't sign, you don't get to log. So for the most part, probably not. If you don't have a pen, you don't get to log it.
See, and here's where I kind of differ, and this may, I don't know, this may be just me. I would agree. I mean, I would say definitely the cache signing it, but I mean, there has been times that I have not signed it with a pen. And the reason for that is I ran out to go, you know, from work. All I had is my GPS with me. I thought there was the one in the car, the pen in the car, and there wasn't. You know, normally there is a pen in our car, but sometimes there isn't. I didn't go back and sign the log. I mean, I probably should have gone back and signed the log, but I mean, I know for me, I found the cache. I didn't say that anywhere in my log that I didn't have a pen. I probably should have, you know, at very least, I probably should have contacted the cache owner. And I probably actually will tomorrow because we're talking about this. I'll probably go back and actually go ahead and contact the cache owner just because I feel bad now. Now that we're talking about it, I feel bad that, you know, that I didn't at least contact him, you know, if not say it in my log, go ahead and contact the cache owner and say that I didn't have a pen. And maybe that's because I'm kind of fearful that they're going to delete my log. And I guess if they do, I go back and sign it and count it as a cache find again.
Now, I'm a Frog 2002 actually just brought up something that I really wanted to mention as well, which is that there are cases where you can't sign the log. It might be full, it might be soaking wet, which is what he had mentioned. And in that case, you know, what are you going to do if the log is full or wet and you can't sign it? In that case, you know, I just have to kind of go with what I know. I'll email the cache owner, contact him directly, tell him, you know, hey, the log was wet. I'll usually put that in my note. I typically won't post a maintenance log, actually, and that's just, you know, out of courtesy, I guess, with the cache owner, in that I want to contact them directly, make sure that they know, make sure that they know I put forth the effort to sign, but I couldn't find any room, or the log was so wet that I couldn't sign it. And in those cases, you know, if I don't get a response from the cache owner, I'll usually place a maintenance log within the next couple of days.
Now, for me, I mean, there have been caches that same thing for me. I couldn't find the cache because there was actually one that I found that the cache was full of ants. Like, I opened it up and there was just tons and tons of ants. So I decided, I'm going to skip logging this cache just because I don't want to have to deal with all of these ants. Or like you said, the log is full, or it's wet. If it's wet, I try and sign it no matter what. I mean, I have a space pen with me that writes on almost everything. But you know, there are times that I don't have that with me and I still try and sign it. However, I differ from you though, Daryl. I would probably go ahead and still post a needs maintenance log because it does need maintenance. I mean, for me, the needs maintenance is to let the cache owner know that it needs maintenance. I mean, I don't think it's a negative thing to see a needs maintenance log on a cache. I mean, if it stays there for a long time, then maybe. But if it's, you know, it's not a negative thing to see that.
Yeah, I can understand that. I just prefer to, you know, take it up with a cache owner first, and if I don't get anything out of the cache owner. Now, and you mentioned the space pen, though, and the space pens are great. That works on a lot of the wet logs. But when the wet log turns to mush, you still can't write on it with a space pen, and that's when it's really a problem. And a couple of people in the chat room have mentioned replacing the logs when they get wet. And most of the time when we've run into the wet logs, it's not even something I could replace because a cache container is just completely soaked and will have to be you know, taken out, dried out, and resealed, which in most of the cases is, you know, completely a viable option, or just replaced. And I don't like typically replacing containers without the consent of the cache owner. If it's someone I know, then yeah, I'll go and do that. If I have a replacement cache in the car, and we carry around a lot of the nano caches for just that reason. But beyond the nano caches, it's sometimes a lot more, you know, picky a hide where it has to be camoed in a certain way or something, and you can't just easily replace the cache. But again, you know, I really want to try to respect the cache owner's wishes there, and without knowing the cache owner, you know, I don't want to just replace their cache.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, and for me even. I've got a handful of, or I did have a handful of logs, I should say. I'm out of the old Cachemaniacs logbooks, and I'm actually out now. But, you know, even then, I didn't replace the logbook if it was full most of the time because it was a nanos we had been finding, and those books didn't fit in there. But even though I didn't replace it because there usually isn't room, especially in a small cache, for a new log, and I didn't really want to take the time, I guess, to take the old log back and try to get with the cache owner. And I guess that's just me. I mean, I would appreciate that as a cache owner if someone would do that, but for me, I just never have. And I guess this is kind of getting away a little bit away from the ethics of logging, but, you know, it's part of logging. I mean, if you can't log,
yeah,
cache,
it gets back into logging and the ethics of replacing the log. Yeah, this kind of gets back to actually that geocaching question of the day, which is if that cache owner did want to go and audit the logs and you replace the log, and you know, in many cases you can't just add a log, you have to replace it. They lose their audit ability. So if they wanted to audit, you've taken that log. Without getting that log to them somehow, they have no way of auditing.
Yeah, and yeah, I would agree too. And that's pretty much why I leave them alone. I mean, if they're going to audit, they're going to audit. I try to find a space to sign it. If I can't, I can't. Now, Daryl, as far as putting spoiler information in the caches, I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, how far do you go putting in information that leads to the cache in your log?
Typically, I try to leave almost no information that will lead to the cache. If it's a cache that I find a little bit trickier, then sometimes I'll try to sneak in a couple of words or something that if you really read into it might kind of lead you toward the cache. But I try not to give anything away about the cache, just maybe something to help someone who gets really stuck find the location if it's one of those really tricky hides. Otherwise, I really just don't want to put any information in that might give it away.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, we try not to put information in. We try to put information more about, like, you know, I was out with, you know, Micah Boy and Eli Dangerous, and we hit this on a Sunday. We thought it'd be fun to go out on cash. I mean, if it's like you said, if it's a tricky one, if it's a tricky cache I'm looking for, I like to try and read things into the logs that are there already. But sometimes that, you know, it was more frustrating than not, because you read things that aren't meant to be read into, and it ends up throwing you off. And, you know, if anything, you should just read into the words that are on the cache page and not the logs. But, you know, I guess that's part of the fun of being devious. And if you're logging the cache, I suppose you could be devious too. I, again, wouldn't want too much information as a cache owner. I wouldn't want too much information on my caches, as far as what people have found. You know, I'm okay with them putting some stuff, but I wouldn't want them to be like, walk straight down the trail and then found the tree that had the X on it, and then there was the cache. You know, that
yeah, what was really, you know, bad is, in my opinion, are the ones that are like, hey, I really like this container. It was the best pile container I've ever seen. You know, well, that's kind of obvious then. And that just really gives it away. But the little clever ones is, you know, I've never seen something like this before. You know, those kind of things don't give anything away. But if you get clever with it, like, you know, I almost stepped in this one. You know, that can be kind of fun. And I actually kind of appreciate some of those kind of hints, because they add to the mystery when you're trying to find it, if you're trying to read into those hints for an extra clue.
Now, not even always on the words, though. I would say that I mean, because obviously we have the ability to place pictures in our logs. Pictures, a lot of times, can be spoilers. I mean, I don't have a problem taking a picture of, like, an ammo can or whatever, as long as you're not showing the actual cache location. Like, if you put it, if it's in a tree stump and you pull it down and on the ground and take a picture close up, you're not going to know where that's at. As long as you can't tell the location of it, if it's a normal cache container, I'm okay with taking the picture of the container, as long as it's not in the hiding spot. Or, I mean, if you do, don't obviously post those to the log.
Well, the especially if they're going to give you a description of this is an ammo can. Okay, if it's just a plain ammo can and it says it, you know, they aren't going to worry about you giving a photo of the cache away, as long as it's not in its hiding spot.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, if it's a special container, definitely don't hide, take a picture of it and hide it, put it on the cache page. I mean, I would probably take a picture of it just for myself, but don't put it on the cache page. And, you know,
yeah, that's what the Flickr group, Great Geocache Hides, is all about.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you're doing virtuals, don't take a picture of the sign that you need to get the information from and post it in the cache log. It's just a dumb thing because you can get the information you don't need to visit the cache location. And that takes the fun out of the cache.
Well, in getting to virtuals, that kind of takes a whole nother discipline, and it applies to Earth caches as well. One of the things that I've really started to discover with some of these virtuals that I started hitting now is the information that they're looking for is probably really available on the net. So a couple of quick Google searches from a ill-conceived log would get you the answers very easily and allow you to find or to claim the find on it by just emailing those answers to the cache owner. So I've discovered that it takes a little bit more finesse to get some of the information I want into my logs, like one of the ones that we hit this weekend was simply there's a plaque on a at this location. Give me the name and what the person had done. So the only things you know is that it was a person and that they did something. Well, when I started writing the log, I realized if I put my original thought in there, which was kind of the genre of this person's career, well, that would give away enough information based on the title and where it was at that you could easily Google that and find information about who that was and what they did. So I couldn't really put that in there the way I wanted to.
Yeah, I would say definitely. I mean, in general, spoilers, if they're going to give it away, don't put them in there. And I guess ultimately it comes down to the fact of if you're going to, I guess what I'm going to call cheat and not actually go to the cache, then I guess that's your loss. I mean, the virtuals are meant to take you to good places that you can't put a high, you know, physical box in. And if you're going to cheat and get that out of a location or even a regular cache and just sign the log and, you know, not claim it, that's your, I guess, if you want to do that, go ahead. But it's cheapening the game and it's taking it. It's no fun.
Well, there were, you know, back when I got into it in 2005 and 2006, there were a few caches of virtuals and webcams that had nothing to do with actually going there. They were all about doing some research either on the net or, you know, in the case of the webcams, it was grab a picture and, you know, Photoshop it to get whatever it was that they wanted. One of them I remember was aliens in Germany, I think it was.
Yeah, and I saw that cache. Yeah, I saw that cache.
Yeah, and you know, I thought those were great. You know, especially for those winter months when you couldn't get out because the snow was, you know, 12 plus inches deep and, you know, 20 below zero. I love those caches.
Exactly.
And it was a lot of fun. I was learning a bunch through some of the virtuals, and I ended up not logging most of those because I really decided early on I didn't feel comfortable with that. The webcam caches where you had to do the, you know, paste the aliens in, that was fun, and I did that because that was the whole point of it, you know, mm-hmm. was to kind of tell a presence almost into you know, a different country. But it was a different kind of game at that point. It wasn't as structured, and I think that geocaching as a whole has changed so much in the last 2 years, even, but especially since 2005 when I got involved. You know, it was a much more lax game. They were still allowing virtuals at that point. It was, I would say within 6 months of my signing up, though, that virtuals, locationless, and webcam caches were frozen and prohibited. So I kind of miss it because I love the virtuals.
Yeah, I did too. And I think that I don't know of anyone that doesn't, but you know, it was a different game back then. And again, kind of getting away from our ethics of logging topic, but it was a different game, and those were nice. You know, the virtuals are nice, and you know, for instance, you and I are gonna go run for a bunch of them, you know, in 2 weeks, and it's been a while since we found them. And as far as, you know, logging, I'm actually looking forward to it. I've not found an Earth cache in a long time.
Oh, yeah, I want to see you, too, on that run if we're going to get to the Earth caches. But, yeah, this is really, I think, kind of getting back to ethics question, because I think the ethics of logging have changed as the game has changed. You know, back in 2005, if you found the logbook sitting out in the middle of the woods, it would have been, you know, clear sign that the cache had gone missing. Just contact the cache owner and let him know that his cache went missing and log the find. Now it's changed a lot in that I think you have to, you know, request permission to log that find. It's not as cut and dry as it used to be.
Well, and Flag Mountain Hiker says, same game, just more tiny containers, which is true. I mean, I think that it is a different game, though. I mean, it's same, it is same game, but it is different because you've got a lot more people have to get more creative now to hide things, and there are just a lot more people who want to place caches just to place them.
Well, and you're dealing with people placing caches in areas where there had been caches before, so it's entirely possible that a cache had gotten muggled and it's still actually in the area. You might have found the wrong cache. Yeah, and we had run into a couple of times. We grabbed something that we thought was a cache and it turned out to be a letterbox. It was within, you know, 50 to 100 feet of the cache location, and we just happened to stumble across it. We were going to sign in when we realized it was a letterbox.
Yeah, so, we had the same thing.
You know, it does get a little bit more complex now that it's becoming, you know, a more saturated playing field.
If anyone has any more information to put in here, give us a call, 724-444-7444. Our Talkcast ID is 7525. If you're listening to this as a recording, as a podcast, give us a call on our voicemail, 206-350-3GPS, on your thoughts on the ethics of logging.
Yeah, now I should mention, too, we've had some great conversation in the chat room, and I apologize, we just can't read all of this stuff out in the show, but those notes will be available also through the show notes.
They will. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com. info, or you can call our voicemail at 206-350-3GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. Happy caching and see you next week.